Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
Tonight we're going to talk about the 1998 movie Bullworth, directed by and starring Warren Beatty. Tell me what brings us to this movie.
Well, I don't remember. I don't think I saw it in the theaters. I would have been living in Portland at this point. And in 98, it would have been crazy busy. So I don't think I saw it. I think this was a movie rental. But I remember loving the movie at the time. But on rewatch, I actually love it better. Because I think perhaps a couple things. I get more of the satire. Also, more of it is true than it was in 98.
Well, yeah. I mean, at first I was thinking that this is a horribly dated movie because some things about it are pretty dated. Like even the hip hop music that becomes a big part of the story is kind of dated. But the thing is, all of the politics are the same or more. And all the characters are the same.
Yeah, it's all the same players. It's you know, it's a different play, but it's all the same actors.
Yeah, and it's eerie that it's the same. Like, they're the same issues, yeah, there's, you know, almost 20 years later.
Yeah, and like I said, that's a sad commentary, a great satire. I mean, the satire really stands the test of time. And I think maybe I just was too young when I saw this. I didn't get it. I liked it. I remember liking it as a movie, but I really, like, on the rewatch, I'm like, God, this was damn funny. You know, it was funny on top of the fact, like, it was also very biting. But I was looking at the box office receipts and it didn't do all that well. So I'm wondering if it hit a little too close to home for some people. And I wonder if they just had also a little bit of election fatigue. So.
Yeah, maybe. And let me tell you, the cast of actors were fantastic.
It was gigantic. I couldn't believe it. I mean, a very young Halle Berry, but beyond that, you know, Sean Astin, Christine Baranski, Warren Beatty, Josh Molina, by the way, which made me question if this was a Sorkin flick.
Oh, yeah. Jack Warden, Oliver Platt, Laurie Metcalf and Wendell Pierce. Bunk from The Wire?
Yeah, exactly.
Isaiah Washington and Don Cheadle?
Don Cheadle. I know. It was crazy. Florence Stanley, by the way.
Who's Florence Stanley?
She was the secretary. She was Fish's wife.
She was Fish's wife?
Yeah. Do you not remember Fish, the sitcom?
Well, I remember Barney Miller.
You know Ava Goda?
Yeah, I remember Barney Miller, but I don't remember enough about it to remember Fish's wife.
Oh, God. Well, the spinoff, Fish. Was I the only one that watched that?
Well, yeah, but you watched it 30 years ago.
Yeah, but it was in my formative years. I would have been like 5. Anyway, the secretary, and she's been in tons of stuff, is Florence Stanley. And I've always liked her because she has that kind of that gravelly voice. She was kind of like Roseanne before there was Roseanne. And she was Bulwer's secretary.
Do you mean Paul Stanley's mom?
Is that who she is?
No, it's not who she is.
Anyway, I've always liked Florence Stanley. I thought she was hilarious when she was alive. So, it was nice to see her. I had forgotten about her. If you look her up in Wikipedia, it's actually her and Abe Vigoda. The picture is her and Abe Vigoda from Fish. So.
Oh, well, that's cool. So, Shall we dive into the plot?
Sure.
Okay. Well, we start with Senator J. Billington Bulworth. And he is in his office. And we soon learn that he hasn't slept or eaten in several days. And he is watching television, but starts out by watching a bunch of his new campaign ads.
Hello, I'm Jay Bulworth. You know, we stand at the doorstep of a new millennium. Our obligation is to reduce our bloated federal government, but at the same time, restore its creative power. To reinvigorate our society? My name is Jay Bulworth. We stand at the doorstep of a new millennium. Our obligation... California families who live by the rules and work hard and pay their taxes shouldn't be paying for people who do nothing. I'm Jay Bulworth. I believe in a hand up, not a hand down. I need your support on Tuesday.
He is a Democratic senator who is, as Wikipedia explains it, he's a down-on-his-luck Democratic senator, is losing his bid for re-election to a fiery young populist. Bulworth's socialist views, formed in the 60s and 70s, have lost favor with voters, so he has conceded to a more conservative politics and to accepting donations from big corporations. And even though he and his wife have been having affairs with each other's knowledge for years, they must still present a happy facade in the interest of maintaining a good public image. And the ads he's watching are pretty bad. They all start with, you know, we're standing on the doorstep of a new millennium. And then proceeds to blame everything on government handouts and black people. So he's watching this and he just eventually bursts into tears because he's not happy with the direction his life has gone. So his campaign staff are Josh Molina from the West Wing, Jack Warden, and Oliver Platt, all of whom do a great job. But we learn that Bulworth is tired of politics and unhappy with his life. And so he negotiates a $10 million life insurance policy with his daughter as a beneficiary in exchange for his vote or his taking an insurance bill and tying it up in committee. And Paul Sorvino plays the insurance lobbyist. And then he hires somebody to have him assassinated within 2 days' time.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's completely ridiculous. And so that sets up the moving parts of the plot.
I would be remiss if I didn't say also, Sarah Silverman was in this, as was William Billy Baldwin.
Yes. So now who is Sarah Silverman? I didn't even notice her.
I didn't notice her either, but she's listed in IMDb. It says she's the second American politics assistant. So who knows?
Yeah, I did not recognize her. But Billy Baldwin I did, because at the very end, he's very prominent, if very short.
Yes, underneath Christine Baranski.
Yes. So
a very young Christine Baranski. So.
Yeah. And the whole idea is he is going to stall this vote to make insurance, health insurance, affordable for poor people, meaning black people in this case. So he's going to tie this bill up in exchange for basically his daughter's inheritance, because he's going to have himself killed. So once he hires the hitman on himself, he still has campaign appearances to make, but he finds the whole thing a little bit liberating. At the same time, he's also like ducking and moving fast, knowing that there's an assassin about to take him out at any turn. So we have that little conflict going on.
Yeah, this is really kind of comedic at points, though.
Oh, yeah. No, this isn't as incredibly dark as it could have been. This is more a comedy.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not as dark as, say, Wag the Dog.
That's true.
Yeah. This is more of a little bit of slapsticky. There's some slapsticky elements to it.
Yeah, the whole thing is hilarious.
Yeah, but he ends up drunk, and he's... going to speak his mind at these public events, and he doesn't realize until after he's hired the assassin, that who he doesn't know, by the way, that he's going to be followed around by a C-SPAN film crew. This is where Laurie Metcalf from Roseanne, Wendell Pierce, Bunk from The Wire, and Sean Astin are that crew. And his first speech that they record, he's giving a speech in front of a group of African Americans at a church, and he just scraps his speech that Oliver Platt carefully wrote and just talks about.
We stand at the doorstep of a new millennium. Our obligation is to reduce.
Listen to this. I put a little time in on this.
And at the same time, restore its creative power. To reinvigorate our society. And bring about a rebirth of democracy. Any questions?
Nice. Good evening. Yes. Less is more.
When the riots and civil unrest went down about 4 years ago, you promised us federal funding to rebuild our community. What happened?
Well, what happened was that we all knew that was going to be big news for a while, so we all came down here, Bush, Clinton, Wilson, all of us. We got our pictures taken, told you what you wanted to hear, and we pretty much forgot about it.
Did he just say what I think he said?
Let's see where he's going with this.
We can't get health insurance, fire insurance, life insurance. Why haven't you come out for Senate Bill 2720?
Well, because you haven't really contributed any money to my campaign, have you? You got any idea how much these insurance companies come up with? They pretty much depend on me to get a bill like that and bottle it up in my committee during an election. And in that way, we can kill it when you're not looking.
Fred, when you say buy the book, what book would that be?
Don't care about the African-American community.
Isn't that obvious? Hey, you got half of your kids out of work and the other half are in jail. Do you see any Democrat doing anything about it? Certainly not me. So what are you going to do, vote Republican? Come on. You're not going to vote Republican. Let's call a spade a spade. I mean, come on, you can have a billion-man march. If you don't put down that malt liquor and chicken wings and get behind somebody other than a running back who stabs his wife, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
If you don't put down that malt liquor and chicken wings and get behind someone other than a running back who stabs his wife, you're never going to get rid of somebody like me.
It was one of the best lines of the movie.
Oh, yeah. And people love his candor, including a pair of black girls who remind me of those two women who are the pro-Donald Trump women on YouTube.
Oh, I am not familiar with this phenomenon.
Hey, y'all. Hey. Okay, so it's a day after the debate, yeah. And y'all know I am mad as hell. Oh, okay? No. And I would be pissed off.
Okay.
But see, somebody done already tried to come for Donald, yes. So I got to come for them.
All right.
Okay,
here we
now, last night on the debate,
uh-huh.
Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly asked Trump to respond to the comments he made about women on Twitter.
Okay.
And on his former NBC reality show, The Apprentice.
Right.
And this is what she said. When it comes to women, you call them fat pigs, dogs, and slob, mm-hmm. Kelly said.
Mm-hmm.
And then only Rosie O'Donnell, Trump interrupted. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the audience started cheering, okay?
Yeah.
For the record, it was well beyond Rosie O'Donnell, Kelly reported, before finishing her question.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the damn deal, Megyn Kelly, your name is. Rosie O'Donnell started that whole foolishness.
Yeah.
She was on a View, and she the one spoke out against Donald, and Donald had to come back on her. So I don't know why you gonna make this here a part of your forum last night.
Yes.
You know, perhaps you don't need to be hosting debates.
Perhaps
what she need to do, maybe it's time for us to file Kelly and make her go back to reporting news at the local news.
Awesome.
Try Sesame Street.
Okay.
Maybe you should go back and report news for Sesame Street or debate with them.
Okay.
You don't need to host another debate.
No.
You don't come for Donald like that.
That's right.
He ain't done nothing to you. Y'all
not
always breaking up his past.
Yes.
He don't do nothing to nobody unless you try to do something to him.
That's how he
Once
is.
You do something to him,
yes.
He go ahead on to do something to you.
Yes.
So listen, let me get this straight.
Get it straight.
You low blow. You
low.
Hit below the belt, Kelly.
Low.
You hit below the belt, girl.
Yes.
But blow on this.
Blow.
Leave my man Donald Trump the hell alone.
Leave him alone.
If you got something to say, you got something you want to tell him, run it by us first.
That's right.
Run it by me first,
That's
and I'll
right.
let you know whether you have permission to come for him.
Yes.
Don't come for him unless he invites your ass, okay? That's all I got to
That's
say.
All
and you can't, you can't do this here.
Can't.
And see, I was all okay, prepared to talk about all the other candidates, but this bitch right here. thank you for censoring me. Pissed me off.
Oh,
trying to comfort Donald last night.
Yes.
And now they trying to make it look like he lost the debate.
Uh-huh.
He the only one up there that has common sense.
Common.
He is the only one up there on that stage with
yes.
common sense.
Yes.
And listen,
uh-huh.
he's going to be the next president.
Yes.
Whether you like it, Megyn Kelly, or Kelly Megyn, whatever your name is or not.
MK.
Get used to it, girl.
Get used to it. Yeah.
They're really funny, and they remind me of these characters from this movie. How they're all aboard, all about Bullworth, because he's speaking his mind and speaking the truth. And also in the audience is a very pretty Halle Berry, who's sort of a activist herself. And her brother, played by Isaiah Washington, who's almost unrecognizable, because Bullworth immediately kind of shows appreciation for how pretty Halle Berry is, and the brother's not having it.
Yeah.
But they all end up going to an underground, like, after-hours club, smoking the marijuana, and then he starts rhyming in order to kind of get his rap on. And at first, Oliver Platt and the rest of his team are kind of going crazy about what is our candidate doing? We got to get him off the air. We got to get him out of the media. We have to stop this. And then he realized that he's becoming super popular because of his, well, pretty much frank, but also fairly offensive remarks he's making.
Yeah. Did you notice, by the way, when they pulled up the first time, the movie's playing at the movie theater?
Oh, what was it?
Superfly and Blackula.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Okay. So a little bit on the nose.
It was really kind of hilarious. I mean, that's a nice tie-in. But earlier when Bullworth and his wife are talking, Christine Baranski, they have a nice exchange where he's talking about his daughter. And he's like, well, she's not here. She's mad. And the wife's like, she's not mad. She's 17. Send her some money.
Oh, yeah. That never changes, I'm sure.
But in Bullworth's office, when he's watching, you see that he's flashing on the TV. There's like the ab roller and the OJ trial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is all like, yeah, infomercials and OJ. But I love when he's talking to Paul Sorvino. He may be a little drunk and hasn't eaten or slept in several days, and he's paying full attention to the television. But he's also, he's not a bad negotiator. He's still acting like a senator.
Yeah, no, his instincts took over. Drunk or not, he's still quite in control.
Yeah.
His political instincts are overriding probably everything else.
Anyway, so he ends up, again, getting in this kind of, goes to this underground club where the bartender mistakes him for George Hamilton or
Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. And, he's really hot for Halle Berry, and she seems interested in him as well, although more coolly.
He really wants Nina. Oh, but I really like Oliver. I think it was Oliver Platt's line where he says, he's talking in rhymes. It's very disconcerting.
Oh, yeah. Oliver Platt is great. I loved him anyway, but he is great in this.
Well, and my finest Oliver Platt is he was in The West Wing for a great many episodes, as was Josh Molina. So it's nice to see them. But of course, this was obviously pre West Wing.
Oh, but one of my favorite Oliver Platt roles is because he was good in West Wing, and of course I think I first noticed Oliver Platt in Flatliners, but I think my favorite Oliver Platt is where he plays Orson Welles and RKO 280.
That's a great movie.
We need to watch it. It's really good.
Was he also in JFK?
He may have been. Everybody else was. It would not surprise me.
No, it's Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, you're confusing him with Joe Pesci.
That's not possible.
No.
You take it back.
So we have this.
The Utes.
We have this kind of. I've never seen that movie, by the way.
My Cousin Vinny?
Nope. Never seen it.
You've never seen it?
Nope.
The award-winning performance by Marissa Tomei?
I know. Haven't seen it.
Well, it's, again, news for you. It's not that good.
Yeah, well, again, that's why it hasn't really crossed my list here recently.
I think I saw it on TV and was glad that I could turn it off.
Yeah, it seemed Joe Pesci never really, even though he's really good in some things, like he was great in Raging Bull, and, he was fine in Home Alone, but I think it was the Lethal Weapon movies that kind of turned me off, where he shows up in Lethal Weapon 3.
Oh, jeez. Well, he's in Goodfellas too, right?
He must be. I know he's in Casino. But anyway, okay, so Bulworth, now he's kind of out of control. He's speaking his mind. He doesn't quite know. I mean, he's trying to do this rap rhyming thing, but he's still way out of his element. He's a little bit of a fish out of water. And he's kind of amused at the fact of all the publicity he's getting. He's chased by the paparazzi. He's chased by his campaign manager and the public and this guy who he believes to be the assassin chasing him. And so there's a lot of chasing going on in this movie. And there's a bit goes into it because he and Nina get closer, and he at one point starts to tell the story about Huey Newton.
So who walks in the room?
Huey Newton.
You know who Huey Newton was?
You know, a lot of people I talk to, they're black at your age, they have no idea who he was.
Huey, why do you think there are no more black leaders?
Some people think it's because they all got killed. But I think it has more to do with the decimation of the manufacturing base in the urban centers. Senator, an optimistic, energized population throws up optimistic, energized leaders. And when you shift manufacturing to the Sun Belt and the Third World, you destroy the blue-collar core of the black activist population. Some people would say the problem is purely cultural. The power of a media that's continually controlled by fewer and fewer people. Add to that monopoly of the media, a consumer culture that's based on self-gratification. Now, you're not likely to have a population that wants leadership that calls for self-sacrifice. But the fact is, I'm just a materialist at heart. If I look at the economic base, high domestic employment means jobs for African Americans. World War II meant lots of jobs for black folks. That is what energized the community for the civil rights movement of the 50s and the 60s. An energized, hopeful community will not only produce leaders, but more importantly, it'll produce leaders they'll respond to. Now, what do you think, Senator?
He also ends up, well, we'll get there in a second, but he goes on a televised debate where he's drinking out of a flask on air and talks about the insurance companies and how the American healthcare system is screwed up and that, you know, poor people are getting the shaft, which, by the way, is the same discussion we're having still today.
Yeah. Well, and this is after they've left the nightclub and the bender, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because you skipped the best part, I think, of the whole movie, where Bulworth is scratching records.
Well, yeah, okay. There's some of that.
That's the best part of the movie, I think. That's the most funny. I just thought, you know, because he's like he's got it all figured out. And he is learning everything he can and absorbing. He's like a sponge in this bar.
Well, it turns out he's a sponge to this whole movie. I mean, he turns out he would be a really good politician.
Go figure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and he's dancing and he's at home with this group of people that he's not, you know, wouldn't necessarily would be. So things are getting more and more out of control, and, his appearance is getting more and more disheveled, and they decide to hang out in, Nina's family home in the ghetto, South Central. And by the way, this is where I put in my notes that Oliver Platt is great, all coked up. And the scene where Josh Molina is like waiting for his turn at the coke, and Oliver Platt never gives it to him.
He wants to crash and burn his entire fucking career? Fine. Fuck it. But I'll be goddamned if that asshole's going to take us down with him, am I right? And it is not like I have not been completely loyal to that pig fucker. I've had other offers, you know, plenty. I beat him up with a stick. Didn't he have it all, though, Bill? Didn't he have it all? Looks. Brains more or less enough. Classy wife. But Jesus Christ, Bill, for God's sake, he had us. The motherfucker had us. If he had just listened to me on welfare reform in 88. If he just chased not quite so much pussy. Could have gone all the way. I behaved, but still might. 2000's wide fucking open, but now, with this shit, we are fucked in the ass, man. Fucked in the ass with our pants on. Cocksucker.
Yeah, he's kind of like what happens to my dog when I'm cooking food, and the dog's like, "Am I gonna get some?" Am I going to get some? If I sit here, am I going to get some? And then, like, nope.
Yeah, it's so funny. So, yeah, so he hides out at Nina's and meets her family. And then he ends up, because Nina, like, took off to go to the laundry or something. And so he's going to go out looking for her. And his, would his clothes get messed up? Why does he have to change clothes? Yeah, there's some reason why he has to.
Well, she took her clothes to the dry cleaners, which is what she uses as an excuse to leave.
Ah, okay. So he's borrowing some streetwear.
Appropriately colored and themed street clothes.
Yes. So he walks down the street and gets kind of accosted by a group of kids selling crack. And in a really funny scene, he ends up buying them ice cream. And then a police officer confronts these kids.
Hey, motherfucker, you buying?
You buying a what?
No, I'm going to the cleaners.
Fuck you.
Fuck me.
I'm doing business here, Cracker.
Wouldn't you rather have some ice cream? I'm buying.
You let that man go out there on the street by himself?
The man is grown.
I go out there every day. If I can go, he can go.
Bro, U.S. Senator ought to be okay among his own constituents.
Gotta got the old boy. Good old boy. How you feeling today? Fine, don't be dandy. Hyper candy.
Well, everybody's feeling crazy. I went to Busy Brain's house to see why don't nobody leave me.
Hey, little spooks find some extra cash today.
Fuck you.
You little black piece of shit, did you say fuck you to me?
No, sir. Say fuck your mama.
Hey, come on. Hey, Derek, come here. Hey! Everybody freeze! Freeze! Freeze!
Get on the ground! Nobody move!
Hey, you! Freeze!
You chicken hawk faggot, get on the ground or I'm gonna pull your brains out!
Do I have your badge number?
Kiss my ass badge number! On the ground, right now!
I think you want to give me your name.
My name? Shut up! Get on the ground and do it now! Mark. Get on the ground right now, Mark. Or you're dead! Get on the ground or I'm gonna pull your fucking brains out!
Mark!
No, Mark. It's Jay Bulworth. This is Jay Bulworth, Mark. It's Senator Jay Bulworth.
I don't give up!
Senator
Bulworth?
Shit!
This is my partner, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Oh. All right, what the fuck is going on here? Sir,
I think if you two get in your car, there's a chance I wouldn't be able to pick you out of a lineup. Come on, let's go. And I think it'd be a good idea to say I'm sorry, huh?
Oh, man, I waited my whole life for this moment.
I'm sorry.
Say no problem, officer.
Oh, fuck your mom, you fucking pig cocksucker.
That's good enough. Take off, huh?
And it really is reminiscent of like Ferguson or some of these other, you know, blowups that have come recently about officers who go in really badge heavy, even though granted these are a group of kids selling crack that have guns, but still.
Yeah. But ostensibly they're eating ice cream and doing nothing wrong.
Well, exactly.
So there's no reason to suspect them. There's no reason to suspect them of wrongdoing at that point. Well, they're eating ice cream. What would kids be doing?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the entire thing. And Bulworth, who's got sunglasses and his streetwear on, you know, asks for the officer's name. The officer's like, no, I'm not having any of that. And he's like, I think it'd be a good idea if you gave me a name. And then they only realize because there is a poster behind him of Bulworth that he is a senator. And that's where he tells the cop that to tell the kid he's sorry.
That's so great. I mean, you know, not that disrespecting the law is something you want to do, but
no, oh, it's
it was still fun.
Yeah, it's a hilarious moment. Absolutely. So after he finds out these kids, you know, what they do, they also finds out that they're soldiers of LD, Don Cheadle, who's a described in Wikipedia as a drug kingpin, but he's at least a drug dealer. And he's the one that Nina's brother owes money to. And he and Don Cheadle has a nice speech, or LD has a nice speech.
Good looking out on the shorties, you know. It ain't every day that a white man comes to the rescue of my little soldiers. I just want to tell you I appreciate
little soldiers.
What exactly do you know about it? Your ass live up in Beverly Hills somewhere, right? Am I right, Beverly Hills? I provide for these little brothers right here. These little brothers is my first line of defense. They my little eyes and ears out there.
Where's Nina?
I'm giving them entry-level positions into the only growth sector occupation that's truly open to them right now. That's the substance supply industry. They're gonna run this shit someday. They're gonna have the whole empire. Man, y'all don't give a fuck about it, you greedy-ass politicians. That's what you tell me every time that y'all vote to cut them school programs, every time y'all vote to cut them funds to the job programs. What the fuck? How a young man gonna take care of his financial responsibilities working the motherfucking Burger King? He ain't. And please, don't even start with the school shit. Man, ain't no education going on up in that motherfucker, because y'all motherfucking politicians done fucked the shit up. So what they gonna do? What a young man supposed to do then, right? What's he gonna do? He gonna come to me. That's what he's gonna do. Why? Because I'm a businessman. And as a businessman, you got to limit your liabilities. And that's what these shorties are for me, limited liabilities. Because of their limited vulnerability to legal sanctions, man. You, it's the same fucking thing in politics, dog. You find an edge, you gotta exploit that shit. That's why y'all send all the motherfucking teenagers to Iraq. Die over some motherfucking oil money. Send the motherfucking CIA up in the hood with all the fucking yayo slanging in the hood, man. It's the same shit in politics.
There's a time when every homie got to risk his neck and fight for the thing that he believe in, and he got to preach it right. If he don't got shit to die for and he's afraid to shed the light, then he ain't got shit to live for, scumbag.
Is that how white people rap?
It's a really eloquent speech in, you know, kind of ghetto language.
But it's right on the nose. Oh, it's right on the nose, though.
And so, I mean, what is, you know, when we get to the climactic speech that Bulworth ends up giving, like his big TV appearance, he is he basically repeats Nina's speech and LD's speech, except in rhyming rap form.
In cringeworthy bad rhyming rap form.
Senator, why this new campaign style? Why this new manner of dress and speech? Your ethnic manner of speech, your clothes, the use of obscenity.
Obscenity? The rich is getting richer and richer and richer while the middle class is getting more poor. Just making billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of bucks. Well, my friend, if you weren't already rich at the start, that situation sucks, because the richest motherfucker in five of us is getting 98% of it. And every other motherfucker in the world is left to wonder where the fuck we went with it. Obscenity? I'm a senator. I gotta raise $10,000 a day every day I'm in Washington. I ain't getting it in South Central. I'm getting it in Beverly Hills. So I'm voting in the Senate the way they want me to, and I'm sending them my bills. But we got babies in South Central dying as young as they do in Peru. We got public schools that are nightmares. We got a Congress that ain't got a clue. We got kids with submachine guns. We got militias throwing bombs. We got Bill just getting all weepy. We got Newt blaming teenage moms. We got factories closing down. Where the hell did all the good jobs go? Well, I'll tell you where they went. My contributors make more profits making hiring kids in Mexico. Oh, a brother can work in fast food if he can't invent computer games. But what we used to call America, that's going down the drains. How's a young man going to meet his financial responsibilities working at motherfucking Burger King? He ain't! And please, don't even start with that school shit. There ain't no education going on up in that motherfucker. Obscenity? We got a million brothers in prison. I mean, the walls are really rocking, but you could bet your ass they'd all be out if they could pay for Johnny Cochran. The Constitution's supposed to give them an equal chance. Well, that ain't going to happen for sure. Ain't it time to take a little from the rich motherfucker and just give a little to the poor? I mean, there's boys over there on the monitor. They want a government smaller and weak. But they'd be speaking for the richest 20% when they pretend and they defend in the meek. Ah, shit, fuck, cocksucker. That's the real obscenity black folks living with every day, is trying to believe a motherfucking word Democrats and Republicans say.
Obscenity? I'm J. Billington Bulworth, and I've come to say the Democratic Party's got them shit to pay. It's gonna pay it in the ghetto. It's gonna pay it in the...
Senator, are you saying that the Democratic Party doesn't care about the African-American
community?
Isn't
that obvious? Look, a lot of people think there are no black leaders today because they all got killed, but I happen to think it's because of the decimation of the manufacturing base in the urban centers. Don't you think so? What do you think my age is?
He's had his time. Bless him.
You know, the guy in the booth who's talking to you on a tiny little earphone? He's afraid the guys at network gonna tell him he's through if he lets the guy keep talking like I'm talking to you. Because the corporation's got the networks and they get to say who gets to talk about the country and who's crazy today. I would cut to a commercial if you still want this job. Because you may not be back tomorrow with this corporate mob. Cut to a commercial.
Okay, flush him.
Cut the commercial. Cut the commercial. Cut the commercial. Cut the commercial. Okay. I got a simple question that I'd like to ask of this network that pays you for performing your task. How come they got the airwaves? They're the people's, aren't they? Wouldn't they be worth $70 billion to the public today if some money-grubbing Congress didn't give them away for big campaign money? It's hopeless, you see. If you're running for office without no TV, if you don't get big money, you get a defeat. Corporations and broadcasters make you dead meat. You've been taught in this country there's speech that is free, but free do not get you no spots on TV. If you want to have senators not on the take, then give them free airtime. They won't have to fake. Telecommunications is the name of the beast that's eating up the world from the west to the east. The movies, the tabloids, TV and magazines, they tell us what to think and do and all our hopes and dreams. All this information makes America fat. But if the company's out of the country, how American is that? But we got Americans with families can't even buy a meal. Ask a brother who's been downsized if he's getting any deal. Or a white boy busting ass till they put him in his grave. He ain't got to be a black boy to be living like a slave. Rich people have always stayed on top by dividing white people from colored people. But white people got more in common with colored people than they do with rich people. We just got to eliminate them.
Eliminate?
Eliminate.
Who, rich people?
White people.
Damn.
Black people too. Brown people, yellow people, get rid of them all. All we need is a voluntary, free-spirited, open-ended program of procreative racial deconstruction. Everybody just got to keep fucking everybody till they're all the same color.
Damn.
I think it's
It's great. I mean, but it is so on the nose, you know, as far as, you know, what's going on. And, you know, this is you know, after this TV appearance where, you know, he basically like sums it all up, and I'll put the quote in cuz it's a long quote, but it's worth it. After that, he ends up like escaping and goes with Nina back to her house. And this is after the person he's like cornered by the person he thinks is the assassin, but it's really a photographer who works for some sort of news outlet, I think a newspaper. And who's the main reporter of that newspaper? Nora Dunn from SNL.
Brilliant.
And his mission, you know, he doesn't have a gun, he's got a camera, he wants to get a picture and maybe a film of the senator and Nina together. But, so they end up back at Nina's place, and he is, you know, he's drunk, but he's like, he's declaring all of his, you know, he's telling the truth to Nina. It's like, hey, you know, so a couple days ago I hired someone to kill me. And he, you know, and what I really think is a nice quote. He's like, the lesson here is to not make life and death decisions when you're feeling suicidal.
Well, that's a pretty good life lesson.
Yeah. But she sort of interrupts that and pulls out a gun and says, yeah, at first I was paid money to end up paying my debt off, my brother's debt to LD. I was going to lead you up to this balcony where you were going to get pushed off and killed. But because that part didn't work out, she was then hired for her $10,000 to do the whole job herself. But now she can't do that because she really has feelings for Bulworth. And at this point, he's relieved and she's relieved, and he finally gets some sleep after this breakneck pace. And then everybody converges on Nina's house, including LD, who's had a change of heart. He's going to let Nina's brother work off his debt.
But he has to wear fake casts on his legs because he's got an image to uphold.
Which is hilarious.
It was like those. It was like those back of the comic book fake cast things.
Oh yeah, it's great stuff. And then Al Bulworth comes from the bedroom looking rested, and he's back in his politician suit. And for a minute, you're led to believe that now that he's had some sleep, he's back to being an extremely white politician guy who doesn't care about anybody. But then turns out he asks Nina to come with him, and they go out and they embrace, and people cheer, and people are suggesting that he actually run for president, not just for senator.
Well, I think the black girls, the backing vocal girls who were chanting Saddam Hussein as backing vocals when he was in the meeting with all the white people, want him to run for president. So,
well, and that's the thing. And he's really relieved because he has called off the contract on himself, and so that's all happy. And just as he's getting into the limo, or actually, sorry, a cab, because his limo is long gone, he is shot and killed in front of a crowd of, well, maybe not killed, but he's shot in front of a crowd of reporters. By who? By the insurance company lobbyists.
Yeah.
Because he wanted a single-payer health care. This is a 1998 movie where he gets killed because he wants single-payer health care.
Well, yeah, I think it's the implication is that he died because you have the black man at the end of the story who's like, Bulworth, you gotta be a spirit, not a ghost.
Yeah, true.
So, I took that to mean that he died with character as opposed to dying without character.
Yep, and then because the old guy, he showed up a couple times already, but at the end, he looks at straight at the audience and says, "You got to be a spirit. You can't be no ghost."
Right.
So he's asking that of all of us.
Yes.
This has some fun music in it too.
By the way, 34 songs listed in the soundtrack.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There is great music through this whole thing. By the way, Nappy Dugout, that's where you get the bugs out.
There's Ice Cube songs, there's NWA songs, The Chase by RZA, there's Black Eyed Peas, there's a song called Che, which in the credit says it contains an interpolation. Oh, by the way, I think it's Che is by the Fugees. It says it contains an interpolation of Islands in the Stream by the Brothers Gibb. But yeah, so it's got a ton of rap songs, and it has him doing a song. So it was written, you know.
Well, it's spurned a hit too, because Ghetto Superstar charted, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know enough about that. I'll have to find. Is Ghetto Superstar? That's
with Wyclef Jean and old Dirty Bastard. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
ODB.
Well, it's performed by Praz and Old Dirty Bastard and Maya.
Yes. I'm pretty sure. Let's see what the computer says. I'm pretty sure that charted, but.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I mean, there were some popular songs in here.
Number two in Australia. Let's see. Yeah, U.S. Billboard Top 100 peaked at 15. U.S. Billboard R&B peaked at 8. U.S. Billboard Rap peaked at 19. So it did chart. Didn't chart super high, but for a movie that didn't get a lot of... this movie didn't do great, but...
Yeah. Well, the song of the movie that's going to be our intro tonight?
Yeah.
Can you guess? That's a lot to pick from. That's hard to guess.
Yeah,
was it the Eve of Destruction where he's talking about how deep is the pussy or something? I thought that would have been a good choice, but it has to be Insane in the Membrane.
Oh, with Cypress Hill.
Yeah, it's got to be that song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have that CD, by the way.
Oh, that was on, it was Hand on the Pump that was on the Stanley.
Stanley. Yeah, no, I do like Cypress Hill. I liked them and nobody knew who they were.
Yeah. So
thank you, Stanley, by the way.
Thank you, Stanley. Is that what you said?
Stanley. Thank you, Stanley, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Stanley. Thank you, Stanley. Marvel Comics, Stanley.
No. He doesn't know who Cypress Hill is.
No, probably not. Well, you never know.
But he's probably trying to make a cameo nonetheless.
Yeah, he would. He would appear as a cameo in the next Cypress Hill movie. So, yeah. So on one hand, you know, I think I texted you because you had texted me how much you forgotten how much you liked the movie. And I'm like, you know, at first I thought this was just going to be really kind of dated. And because you think of, you know, when I think of Warren Beatty, I think of a total lefty. So I'm sure that, you know, he didn't have to do a lot of exposition to explain that he was a liberal senator. Because he's played by Warren Beatty. He's not going to be a conservative senator. They have to do some hard work for that. But all they have to show him is he's sad that he's had to stoop to these levels. And you believe it because you have all that Warren Beatty baggage that I don't think, like, if Journey watched the movie in 10 years, she wouldn't understand. It'd be fine, but she wouldn't get that Warren Beatty is who Warren Beatty is.
No, and see, and when I was watching this, I was thinking, oh, this is quite a far film from the Parallax view.
Well, yes, it is. But, yeah, there's lots of other really good Warren Beatty movies out there that are, I don't know how they'll hold up, but like Shampoo or even Reds. I've never seen Reds. And that's like, I think it's a love story or a drama.
Bugsy's a great movie.
Oh, I remember Bugsy. If only for the quote, go jerk yourself a soda. yeah, actually, no, you know what? I do remember Bugsy very fondly because I remember the end as well.
I thought Bugsy was a great movie. I don't think many people liked it, but I really thought it was a great movie. He was also in Heaven Can Wait.
Well, and if you talk about movie canon, he was in Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, yeah.
That was a movie that changed things. Like ultra, ultra violent and the bad guys being seen as heroes and stuff. So we may have to put that on our list at some point.
Huh. Yeah, because I've never seen it.
Yeah, I've never seen it either. I've seen clips of it, but I've never seen it all the way through, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so we should definitely put that on the list then.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, Ishtar. Oh,
and Ishtar, yeah. I'm interested to see what Ishtar looks like since I just remember it being a flop.
Yeah, Dick Tracy.
Yeah, and that kind of flopped too, right?
Yeah, that didn't do too well.
But, of course, that we could blame that on Madonna.
The Untitled Warren Beatty Project completed 2016 with Warren Beatty playing Howard Hughes, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been working on that movie for a long time, I think.
Huh. That's interesting.
So it would be the other half of the Howard Hughes story that The Aviator started. Another movie which I have not seen.
Wow. The cast of that movie. Wow. Matthew Broderick, Alec Baldwin, Martin Sheen, Annette Bening. Oh, of course, Annette Bening. Candace Bergen, Oliver Platt. Good Lord.
I think Warren Beatty is one of those guys you want to work with, you know? You'll work for a scale that, you know, so you can work with him.
Yeah, there's a ton of... that'll be interesting. I didn't know anything about this. So we've gone down kind of the rabbit hole, as it were, because I didn't know anything about this.
Yeah, well, this may be kind of a short episode, but because I think we're pretty much done with Bulworth. It's well worth seeing. There's a lot of really quote-worthy stuff, but you should experience it. It's good. It's better than I thought it was going to be on rewatch. I was very happy to watch it again.
Me too. And you say you didn't think it held up. I'm like, I don't see a lot of it.
No, I think it holds up really well. I was worried in that first couple of minutes.
That it wasn't going to hold up?
Yeah, that things in politics have changed, but it turns out they haven't.
No, that movie could have been, I mean, were it not for the television set which you saw, and the VHS tapes that you saw, and the really old barking dog in the background cell phones that they had, you know, this movie could have been made today. I mean, obviously you'd have to change the president and vice president's debates and all that stuff, but
oh no, the bunch of yokels that are running now, you don't have to change any of them. And yeah, hear that our vice president may throw his hat in the ring?
Yeah, I saw that. I don't think it's going to happen. Are we done with the movie?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, unless you have anything more to talk about the movie.
No. It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you should go see it and go into it with an open mind, even though that the rap is cringe-inducingly white, dude. And it is.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, but what was funny, I think, was that because it had all of the real songs kind of behind it, and he first started kind of sounding like a buffoon when he starts rhyming, that is all on purpose. Because by the end, he has absorbed enough real information to give a very clear message.
Yeah.
So that's why it's sort of tragic at the end when he gets gunned down.
Yeah.
The bird is mocking the dog, and the dog is, of course, taking the bait.
You haven't taught your children better than that?
It's because the bird is incorrigible. Yeah. So the dog is crazy. So anyway. Yeah, no, that just a quick political thing. I don't really get too much involved in politics on the podcast, since that's not what the podcast is about, except that I find it amusing, that Biden is seriously considering running and might end up getting the support of the president over Hillary Clinton. But the piece of trivia I was going to mention is apparently no sitting vice president who has put himself into the primary has failed to gain the nomination. Yeah. Everyone has gained, they haven't all won, but they have all gained right. The nomination of their party.
Al Gore. I mean, yeah. For God's sakes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's tough to run against a vice president, because if nothing else, you have that kind of, you know, unless gravitas. You're Dan Quayle, you have that kind of thing on your resume.
Yeah.
You know, you have already been a heartbeat away from the presidency. So, you know.
Yeah. I was in the room when we got Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. And hopefully he doesn't have his own JoeBidenEmail.com server at his home.
I don't think he does.
Because that
I doubt that he. I doubt that he even knows that half of that technology exists.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing
He's pretty old. I mean, I like. Don't get me wrong. I like Biden as a vice president. I think he's a cool guy. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a level-headed guy. I think he has all kinds of experience, and he wouldn't be a bad president. But I can only imagine what Hillary. Just her head would explode.
No, she might actually assassinate herself a president if that happened.
But, you know, Bernie Sanders is doing a pretty good job, too.
I mean, he's doing great. He's not going to win, but he does great. He's doing great.
I don't know. I, you know, they said the same thing about Barack Obama. He wasn't going to win either.
Yeah, but that's not.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know, you know, Hillary's the lead, but she was in the lead last time too. So you got to be, you know, it's still early, folks, and we don't know who we're running up against in the Republicans, and we may be running up against Trump. Which, oh my God, I could only hope.
Can you imagine? This by the time this comes out, this is going to be very, very early September, 2015. Can you imagine November 2016 if your choices are Trump or Sanders?
It just makes me giddy and excited, and I love politics in this country because it's a blood sport, and I dig it. I dig it. Makes me sound ultra white. I know, but I'm such a politics junkie.
I don't even the day to day politics I don't like very much, as it turns out, but I really like the presidential elections. And to a lesser extent, the national elections, like senator and Congress and stuff. But
some of the drama and the debates are just fascinating. And watching people talk, like, did you not realize that there's videographic evidence of what you said last week? Are you not aware that there's cameras everywhere and there's maybe these devices that maybe record sound and picture?
Well, and, you know, we talk about how, you know, everybody who heard the Nixon-Kennedy debate on the radio thought that Nixon won, but everybody who watched him on TV thought that Kennedy won because Nixon was a sweaty mess. The problem is, these days especially, you don't have to have a coherent platform, you just have to have a like 3 sound bites per debate and not say something stupid. You need to sound
witty. You have to not fall off the stage.
Yeah, you don't fall off the stage, but you also have to have some sort of like quip, some sort of witty sound bite. If you can get 3 of those in debate, you have won that debate.
Yeah.
And that's a sad truth. Hey, well, Preston's going to visit my town in a couple days.
I saw that on the news about how everybody's unhappy that the state has to pay money for this.
Oh, it's expensive and it's going to cause a mess. They are also grounding all air traffic for some periods when he's flying around, which turns out in Alaska, it's not the commercial traffic, although that's a pain in the ass. It's all of that general aviation traffic that's going to be grounded. Like
tourists.
Well, no, but if you run a guide service, you know, for hunting, which is happening now, yeah. If you can't take off and land, you're out customers. Like that's money out of your pocket. So you're not happy about that. And if your traffic is fucked up downtown, because you know this is Anchorage, Alaska, we don't really have traffic to speak of. There are a couple busy times, and we have one major highway that gets kind of backed up. But really, you're not really gridlocked.
But you don't have a way around that highway.
Well, yeah, you don't have a way around a lot of different little veins. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, when he comes to town here, it's always a big deal because, you know, all the people that I don't commute far from work. I've got 10 minutes drive max each way. And but I've got people that drive an hour and a half each way. And it's always just a terrible, terrible cluster fuck for them because they have to drive around out of their way to get where they're going. And it's not easy. And, you know, and then there was parts of downtown that were closed and, you know, it's already difficult to get around downtown and, you know, cause every other street's the other direction. And yeah, it's just a headache.
So. Yeah. And you know, it's a security nightmare too, because God knows you don't want to be the place that, nobody wants to be Dallas in 1963. So, you know,
yeah, it's that kind of notoriety you don't really want in your tourist brochures.
No. It's also, it's a point of pride.
Let's go visit the book depository.
Well, I mean, I guess it engenders a certain amount of tourism. But, yeah, you don't want your name, you know, especially since we don't have a lot of other notable events in our history, necessarily. This, you know, something like that would be the biggest one. So we're going to avoid that if possible.
Yeah.
So. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.